You're listening to a podcast from 702.
702.
The Clement Maniatela Show.
Let's walk the talk.
So every Thursday, we pick an important issue to discuss with a panel, and our discussions are always based on a question, right? And today's question is, and you can already start sending me your WhatsApp voice notes. You can call me to respond to this question. I'll ask my guests the same question too. Are prison rehabilitation programs effective enough? Does the parole system need a relook and a rethink? And I'm asking this question because we are facing serious challenges with reintegrating offenders into society. The Minister of Justice indicated this week that 555 crimes were committed by parolees, with theft and robbery being the most prevalent. And this is just in the first quarter of the year, by the way. 50 murders, 66 house breakings, 71 robberies, 123 thefts, just among others. And you've got to ask why offenders reoffend. Is it the lack of support outside the correctional system? Is it the socioeconomic issues? Because sometimes employment is a big factor. It's difficult for some to access employment because some companies don't employ offenders, right? So they end up going back to crime. And of course, some just refuse to desist from the life of crime when, even though with their cases, there are no unique circumstances pushing them back to prison. But the reality is, sometimes parolees have to deal with the stigma of being an ex-offender, and that makes it difficult for them to reintegrate into society. So I want to know, what role can we play as communities? I know the National Institute for Crime Prevention and Reintegration of Offenders believes the country's criminal reoffending rate is high because rehabilitation and reintegration programs are largely absent from the justice system. But is it fair to rest that responsibility to rehabilitate offenders entirely on the correctional system? I don't think it is. We've got to play a part as well. Do you think the problem is that offenders leave prison in a worse condition than before? And what should happen to avoid a case where they reoffend? Should we start looking at making sure that there are severe consequences for repeat offenders? And maybe that will be a deterrent for parolees. Send me a voice note on 012-702-1702. You can call me also on 011-883-0702. Let me introduce you to my guest. We've got Dr. Casper Litter, who is a conflict criminologist affiliated with the Northwest University. Dr. Litter, thank you so much for making time. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
We also have Golden Miles Budu, who is the national spokesperson of the South African Prisoners Organizations for Human Rights. Golden, thank you for making time. Good morning.
Thank you for inviting me, Cameron. Thank you for 702 listeners and fellow South Africans.
We also have Singabako Nxumalo, who's the spokesperson at the Department of Correctional Services. Singabako, I appreciate you making time this morning as well. Hi, Singabako. All right, we'll try and re-establish that line with Singabako. So let's start with you, Golden Miles, and then I'll ask you the same question I'm asking the listeners this morning, and we'll go into the details of what we've seen before, what we need to do. Do you think prison rehabilitation programs are effective enough?
Look, they cannot be, and they shall not be, for as long as the Department of Correctional Services is run along those lines of a personal fiefdom, run along those lines of political interference and deployment of politicians who has got absolutely no interest in the training, education, skills development. That's investment that need to bring us to the final product called rehabilitation, and thereafter reintegrate them as law-abiding and useful, productive citizens. How many times have the South African prisoners and myself not been here since 1991? 120 million times. And it all falls on deaf ears because our institutions are run along those lines the way they used to be run previously, like Fork Stages when the Afrikaners were in charge. Now it's run along the lines of stand to stand, where you hear correctional officers tell you, It's my prisoners. It's my prison. It's my tractors. It's my stock on the farm. And anything that moves here belongs to me. This is what you are told by a correctional officer. But they do as they please. They get away with it. And rehabilitation can only happen when there is investment. And nobody is prepared to invest in the Department of Correctional Services rehabilitation because there is no leadership there.
Yeah. Dr. Leta, what's your view? Are these rehabilitation programs more effective? Golden Mile says, the thing is, no one is interested in actually making that important investment. And until then, we're going to sit with the same problem.
Good morning, Golden. Yes, of course, he's correct. But I would like to focus more on the underlying problems. There are a number of aspects at play here, but I would only like to highlight two. The first issue is South Africa's harsh stigmatizing shaming culture, which you highlighted in your introduction. Our harsh stigmatizing shaming culture perpetuates the marginalization, stigmatization, and discrimination of offenders and ex-offenders, which exceed their court-sanctioned punishment and leads to a great amount of resentment. Many criminologists, notably the Australian comparative criminologist John Braithwaite, argue that stigma is counterproductive and criminogenic as it leads to enhanced recidivism rates. The problem, as I see it, is not so much with the parole system. It's with the conditions once prisoners are released from prison, which are not encouraging and leads to almost invariably a high percentage of recidivism or reoffending. We don't need the terms, but rather encouragement and support to help these people to resettle and take control of their lives. In the conflict management literature, this is referred to as a doctrine of basic human needs.
Mm-hmm.
If people do not get the respect and opportunities which are available to others, this will almost certainly lead to resentment and reoffending. So, irrespective of whatever rehabilitation programs, DCS offers within their centers, it's neither here nor there if the conditions outside prison cannot encourage these people to actually make an effort to rehabilitate.
Sure. So, and we'll talk about the parole system later. Golden Miles, if there were two things you thought government could focus on to somehow strengthen that rehabilitation program, what would they be? Because sometimes people argue that some prisoners come out of prison even worse. Some of the offenders, they come worse than they went in because of the culture in prisons, because of the gangs in prisons, because of how ineffective or ineffective those programs are. So if there were two things that needed to change, what do you think they would be?
Clement, let me keep on sounding like a USB that is infected with a virus. You know, we have sold so many years ago a model whilst we were still friends with the department and members of parliament in the Portfolio Committee on Correctional Services. That this is what we must do. Sentenced and unsentenced prisoners, we call them nowadays revolutionaries. Please, let's not go and argue why we call them revolutionaries. It's almost a year and few months that we decided as an organization to call them revolutionaries. This is a debate for another day. We said to them, they have got the right to vote, although it has been sabotaged for political reasons. And let's politicize the criminal mind. Do something that never happened in this country and never happened over the world, to say you've got a right to vote, use your vote because your vote is supposed to be your voice.
Mm-hmm.
And stay away from these criminal activities whilst you're doing time and after you have served your dues, one. After we have politicized you, let's talk with government to industrialize these institutions and turn them into industrial hubs where you will, if you are skilled, get in there for the wrong or right reason, you start to be put at work. And if you are not skilled, you are trained to be skilled. If you are semi-skilled, you are trained. And then thereafter, become productive and earn a stipend. And from the stipend, you'll start to pay your rent, you'll start to pay tax, you'll start to be a responsible citizen where you're even going to pay for your food out of the stipend. Mm. And if you've left a family outside for the wrong or the right reason, the Department of Social Development must come to the party so that you make a contribution to the to a family trust fund that your wife, your mother, whoever you left your children with, must get a grant. And finally, unionize those who are productively working in the system, and that is the chemical, scientific, and biological formula we sold to them to get to the final product called rehabilitation, and thereafter that rehabilitation become something very, very easy. And monitor, evaluate the rehabilitated and reintegrated product. It all fell on deaf ears because it's not something that came from them. Mm. It came from a criminal called Miles Boot and his likes.
Dr. Letta, Miles talks about the training that's needed. Let them earn a stipend. Let them be unionized. Let them contribute towards tax. Do you think that would set them up for when they leave prisons? Because part of the question I've asked earlier is the kind of responsibility we have as communities. Because what you find is there's lack of support outside of the correctional services system, and there are socioeconomic issues. Sometimes employment is a big factor. There are companies who have decided they will not employ offenders. So employment becomes a big factor. It's difficult for some people to access employment, and they end up going back to their life of crime. So how do we set them up so that when they are done with prisons, whether they've been rehabilitated or not, they're going into communities that are not putting not only shame on them, but they're going into communities that also are willing to integrate them back by also providing them with opportunities where they exist for employment?
Yes, I think you're right. The biggest problem ex-offenders face upon their release from prison is lack of employment opportunities. And discrimination and marginalization of that sort is what makes many of ex-offenders give up, you know, and then decide, let me just go back to a life of crime. At least I can earn something there, you know. So that is a big problem. Miles is probably right in saying that skills might help, but at the end of the day, with the enormous hurdle of discrimination and marginalization that they meet on the outside, I think that's not necessarily the answer, because the problem is not just our harsh stigmatizing shaming culture, but also the power of the state to forge stigmatization and marginalization practices which are not always for benevolent ends. Jeffrey Ryman, a conflict criminologist based in the US, refers to this phenomenon as a pyrrhic defeat theory. And it refers to the demonization of a poor as criminogenic to deflect attention away from the far more monstrous crimes of the wealthy and the politically connected. In South Africa, I can only refer to state capture and consider the calamity, the unbelievable calamity when they try to jail Zuma for a fairly petty crime of contempt of court. Every day people go to prison for stealing bread and other necessities. But politically connected people like Ubaba will never see the inside of prison, or has seen it for a very short period of time. So the problem is many faceted, and I think I think the most important issue is probably to try and grow integrative shaming measures within our harsh stigmatizing, shaming culture. In the last few years, that has been my research project, to see how we can transplant these sort of features from integrative shaming cultures such as China and Japan. After all, Africa has a tradition of integrative shaming cultures.
I want to bring in Dr. Adua Salim to join the conversation, who is a senior social worker at NICRO. Thank you for making time, Adua. As NICRO, what do you think is behind the country's criminal reoffending rate, you know, as high as it is? What do you think the problem is? What do you make of this rehabilitation and reintegration programs?
Oh, thank you so much for the opportunity. I'm sorry again for joining late. We had network issues here due to load shedding. But first things first, I've also seen statistics in terms of the recidivism rate of offenders who are on parole. And there are so many factors that actually contribute to these. Firstly, you find that there are biological reasons. For instance, you find that some people, they've got psychological issues or genetic factors from back home. And also there are societal problems, like the social issues that are happening in the communities. And over the community itself, if you look at different communities, you can measure them by their way of living. For instance, if you go to Joburg, you know that, you know what, when I'm at the park station, I need to conduct myself this way. And then if you go to Northwest, you know that I'll have to conduct myself this way. So the children or people who are staying in such particular communities, they have different mindsets and also different ways of looking at things, and which also promote the mindset of people having to say Joburg is got a high rate of crime, so now that's normalized, you know, they normalize such things. So we need to revert back from that kind of mindset. That is why NICO is also engaging in community projects where we do awareness campaigns to educate people about the criminal thinking patterns and how to refrain from that. We use the approach of the cognitive behavioral therapy in our interventions. So in terms of the rehabilitation and reintegration, for instance, the programs that are set to assist the clients, or I can say the offenders, whether the parolees or the ones who are actually undergoing trial, for instance, those who are attending the course for petty crimes, those programs, we engage them in them after doing a thorough assessment that will actually assist us to see the risk factors that I was mentioning earlier in terms of the social aspect and the biological aspect and even other psychological aspects. So after discovering that, then that's when you know where to place the person. Hence, there's this research on the risk meet responsibility principle.
Yeah.
That model is very important to utilize as well, because then it means if you knew that this particular criminal who committed an offense of theft, if I put him in a program like this, maybe for instance, adult life skills, it's going to work for everyone.
Yeah, and I want to hear from the correctional services department and how they're doing it. I mean, when you look at the cases, the Western Cape High Court in January convicted a 55-year-old man on charges of kidnapping, of rape and murder. This is of an 8-year-old boy from Tulbagh, Regan Gertse. The culprit, Jacobus, who committed the crime a few months after his release on parole for a similar case crime. And then there was the 6-year-old Buntle. Remember her? Buntle Mashiani's lifeless and mutilated body, which was found in the bushes in Mpumalanga earlier this year. One of the accused, Colin Hlongwane, a serial violent offender who was actually released on parole twice for attempted murder in 2008 and 2013. And that's not all. There was a man arrested in connection with the kidnapping and murder of 8-year-old Tasne van Wyk. We spoke about this last year. And that man had absconded from parole a year before she went missing near her home in Elsis River in Cape Town. And that accused person had served about 10 years for culpable homicide and kidnapping. There was a 47-year-old man from the Northwest, Basimane Sibata, who raped a woman 5 days after he was released on parole for another rape. And the rape took place in March in 2020. And just this week, the Daily Voice was reporting that the man accused of killing a Gugulethu teenager and stuffing her body into a wheelie bin was actually out on parole for rape at the time. I mean, what does that tell you? Singabakho Nxumalo is joining us, who's the spokesperson for the Department of Correctional Services. Singabakho, as I go through these cases, I can just imagine why communities would often feel, I am not even ready to be part of the reintegration into society of these people, because I don't know what's going to happen next. Because we often hear of these stories of people repeating the crimes that they were released on parole for. What is it that the Department of Correctional Services is not getting right when it comes to rehabilitating these offenders?
Have a good morning, Clement, and thank you for the opportunity. It is unfortunate that more often it is those who find it hard out there that will really cause so much disturbance, and those who have no intentions of living peacefully, that upon being placed out, they will then go back into the life of crime. I'm saying this because there are many people who have over 65,000 parolees in this country, and it's only a small percentage that goes back into the life of crime. But even if it's just one of them, it does cause harm, it does pain us. Then the question is, what is it that as correctional services, as communities, we can then do in order to prevent these people from harming other people? And what we've done as correctional services is that we'll rehabilitate people. We have parole boards who will then consider them, and when they deem them suitable for placement, they'll place them out with particular conditions. The challenge comes in when a person is no longer complying with conditions, and we are not informed, or even our monitoring officials detect that this person has gone back to the life of crime. Then that's when a disturbance happens, because the things that they then do, they will then make society to believe that rehabilitation doesn't work, which is not the case. The rehabilitation does work. But how do we then deal with these few who have no intentions of living in harmony with other people?
Yeah. But what, just before we go to the headlines, what, how effective are those programs? Do you believe they are?
We strongly believe they are effective, looking at the number of people that we've placed out, and successfully they've managed to take advantage of that second chance, and they're doing wonders out there. And wouldn't want to then rob them of such an opportunity, because we have these few who have no intentions of doing what is right. Then it's a matter of saying, perhaps we need to strengthen the monitoring that we offer, and also making society to fully understand how to go about aiding us as correctional services, but even those people who are living with parolees, to say, don't keep quiet, don't not be scared, don't be threatened. The moment the person is no longer abiding, even if you're a neighbor, do report that person even to the nearest police station, so that you can get that person back as a matter of urgency.
Singaba Kangumalo, thank you for responding to that. It's exactly 11:31. And I know it's more complicated than that, right? It's easy to say, oh, just call the police and report Clement, you know, but some people are scared, you know, and Singabako is right. There are probably just a few cases that are so brazen where offenders are reoffending same crimes that they are out on parole for. And when people hear those, they become cautious and they don't want anything to do with those that have offended. But what that does sometimes is push these people out, because they're not reintegrated into society. Nobody wants to hire them. There's shame over their lives, and they go back to the life of crime. So how do we balance it?
Let's walk the talk.
This is Clement Manyathela
on 702.
It's 23 minutes before 12 o'clock. We continue our conversation with our Thursday dialogue. And this morning, on our Thursday dialogue, we're asking the question, are prison rehabilitation programs effective? And I'd like to hear from people who have actually gone to prison and came back, or people who are in prison, right? How are those rehabilitation programs? So let's hear directly from the people that are undergoing these programs and whether or not, in fact, they are helpful. Let's go to some calls now, and then I'll go back to my guests. 011-883-0702. Let's take Tumelo. Tumelo, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm all right. So you are a prisoner, I understand.
Yes.
And how, what are you serving and what are you serving for?
I'm serving my sentence for murder.
For murder?
Yes.
What's your experience with rehabilitation programs in prisons?
Number one, I will start by saying, in fact, we don't justify crime in any way. But what I will say to the department is that there's nothing that they actually giving us as offenders to get proper rehabilitation. The only thing that is happening, we are rehabilitating ourselves. We are the one that are trying to make sure that we get what you want. Because at the end of the day, the only thing that they do is to just lock us in and make sure that we get food and be locked out and be locked in inside our, what you call, inside ourselves. At the end of the day, they don't care about what is happening to us, what is happening to our lives and even previous lives, yes.
So as prisoners, how are you rehabilitating yourselves? When you say we're actually giving ourselves that rehabilitation, how are you doing it?
I will say in a prison where I am, there are things that are being offered. But those skills, you can't even utilize them when you get out because you are just going to attend a certain skill for a period of 30 days, which is just used that you must just go to appear before the parole board and you go out. After that, there's nothing that you have learned in that particular program. The only thing that you got is a certificate that will be able to assist you to undergo the parole board.
Have you been released on parole before, Tumelo?
I've been here since 2004.
Sure.
And as far as I'm concerned, I believe that I am fully rehabilitated through the programs that I got from a private prison in Kutama that was since 2006 this far.
So are you saying that the services that are often provided by the private sector working with the prisons are more effective than the programs from the correctional services?
99% effective.
Sure. Wow. Tumelo, thank you for calling us.
I'm not done.
Oh, go ahead.
Yes.
Sure.
But what I wanted to know from the department, I'm serving life sentence, I wanted to know as to how many of those that have re-offended are serving life sentence.
How many of those that have re-offended are serving life sentence?
Yes.
Is there a reason you're asking that question?
The reason is that, as well as far as the matter is concerned, is that lifers, or those that are serving lifers, have undergone through a full rehabilitation process. Mm. They are the ones that are much disciplined than those that are serving petty crimes.
Oh, so
and they have been given what you call a chance, but they've still proved themselves that they are fully rehabilitated. Because as I understand, there are only few. Even in fact, I would say there's none. I would say that there's none that have re-offended. Even if I'm not having any evidence, but as far as, because we communicate with the people that are outside to check as to who and what is he doing.
Yeah, I mean you
they are doing much. They're doing much better than those that are serving a smaller sentence.
Yeah, tell me, Tumelo, like, because you say you are rehabilitated, have you met with the family of the, you know, the victim, you know, the person that you murdered? Have you spoken to them?
Okay. Yes, I did spoken to them, but I will say they didn't forgive me. Because, and I understand, even myself, if I did such a particular, if they did such a crime to me, I was not going to forgive them as well. But that doesn't mean that, because they didn't forgive me, that doesn't mean that they were not supposed to release me because I have not been forgiven. Because at the end of the day, I've been given these programs to prove myself that I am ready to face the outside world. These rehabilitation programs are not being offered to us to stay inside the prison. They have been given to us to go outside and prove ourselves.
But how do we balance it though, Tumelo? So, I mean, I can only imagine for the family of the victim, the person you've murdered, do you understand why they would actually not be happy with even the slightest suggestion that just because you feel rehabilitated, then you must somehow go back and be reintegrated into society? They want accountability, and for them, accountability may be Dumelo must stay in prison serving life sentence because he caused this much pain on our lives.
It is very sad, but at the end of the day, the government that you are having, I think it's failing the people from our society. Why I'm saying that, if the government knew that Dumelo has done this and is still going to be given a chance, but at the end of the day, he might still recommit. Why can't they just kill me? Why can't they just bring back the death penalty as to say, Dumelo, this is what we have done, and we don't see you fit to go back to the society.
Mm. Yeah.
So the only way to fight against crime is for you to what you call, or the only way to discourage other people not to fight crime is for you to be what you call, to be killed as well, because you've taken someone's life.
All right, Dumelo, thank you for calling us. Dumelo is calling us from his prison cell. He's serving life sentence in prison, and he believes he is rehabilitated. Golden Miles, I imagine, you know, as you know, an organization that deals with South African, you know, prisoners, is this the kind of, you know, opinion and perception you get from most of the prisoners you speak to?
Clement, let's do this. You know, the issue of parole needs a 7-hour debate. There are lifers that qualified under the Van Vieren 1 and 2, Van Wyk and Opapasa constitutional judgment. The case was heard, the last case was heard in February, and we are all waiting in anticipation for the judgment, and the judgment is not going to come very soon, number one. Number two, you know, Singabako Nxumalo is not telling the truth, and he has been doing this for years on end and is getting away with it. You know, if I was not in a good mood today, I would...
Your questions.
Your morning radio with Clement Maniatella.
This is 702.
It's going up to 10 minutes before 12 o'clock. Let me first start with Singabako before I go to your calls. Singabako, maybe you can respond to some of the comments that Dumelo was making, and also I'm interested to know from you as the department whether you think if we make sure that there are severe consequences for repeat offenders, would that be a deterrent for parolees?
Yes, okay. It's interesting that a person will say there's no rehabilitation, yet in the same breath goes on to say there are skills that you are made to attend. For me, that's very interesting. What we need to highlight is that we don't offer just any form of training. We offer accredited training, meaning that the skill that you get and the certificate that you receive once you've completed, you can use that skill wherever you could, you know, secure employment in the country, because it is the same type of training that anyone will receive in any form of a college or an institution.
Yeah.
And we pride ourselves with that, because we are making a difference, and we're not just giving people something that is of no value. And what is of interest, and I'm glad that this is 702. I've taken 702 to Luke Op Production Center. I've taken 702 to Boxback Production Center. We do these media tours specifically to showcase that there is rehabilitation taking place. There are programs available. But sadly,
that you and I know those are curated, right? Media tours. I've attended many of media tours to power stations, to prisons. They are very curated. On that day, everybody is clean. Everybody, because you've curated that way, Singabako. You and I know that.
You cannot move that machinery in a day to put it somewhere because there's 702 coming. It is always there. The pickup is always there. You know, wood workshops, you cannot just move all that material. But what has to be said is that it also starts with an individual. If a person is prepared to be rehabilitated, it will work wonders. But when someone is off, doesn't see value in it, unfortunately, we will struggle.
Mm.
But just a month ago, I was in Gamasimola in Limpopo. A parolee there learned agricultural skills in prison. He knew nothing before he went in there.
Mm.
When he was placed out, he struggled to get a job. He said, look, man, I learned a skill there. Let me use it. As I'm talking to you today, he's not just selling his product in the street. He's supplying two major supermarkets there and has employed other people. I'm just demonstrating to you that if a person is prepared, you do get rehabilitated. As a department, we do believe that we've got more than enough ammunition to assist people to change their life around. But we do need everyone to play a role.
Yeah. Adua, what do you think of this suggestion around these severe consequences for repeat offenders as a deterrent for parolees? I know you guys have previously even suggested that there must be a rehabilitation grant, you know, to released offenders in order to help them, you know, get on their feet. And this is going to, you know, assist with less re-offenses. Yes, Adua?
Hello, hello.
Yes.
Can you repeat your question, sir?
I want to hear your thoughts on this idea of making sure that there are severe consequences for repeat offenders as a deterrent for parolees, but also this concept of ensuring a rehabilitation grant to released offenders in order to help them get on their feet, and that way you are assisting with less re-offenses.
Oh, okay. You know, NICRO as an organization, we also do go to prisons. We have a program called the R&R, Restoration and Reintegration. So I think in terms of that, yes, it could work only if we can do a proper implementation as stakeholders, because each and every sector would need to come together with their expertise and draw up a plan, or maybe sort of like a manual to say, this is how we're going to go about. Because remember, we also do an evidence-based practice in our intervention. So everything we need to be tested first and to ensure that we use it properly on people.
Yeah.
So if someone was to get an opportunity for funding to start their own business, then they don't even need to get that particular grant, because then they'll be able to sustain themselves. They'll also be able to hire others as well. Because I also knew someone in Soweto who passed away recently. He learned the skills of making candles, and he was in partnership with Soko. They provided him with some wax and stuff, and he supplied candles almost all over Soweto and most of the housing parks. So I think for the grant, it could cause some kind of dependency instead of getting them to be independent.
I hear you. Let's take some calls now. Moss, you're in Diepkloof. Good morning. Sure, Moss. You are an ex-offender.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What's your experience, and how long were you in prison for?
I done 32 years. Attempted murder. Then the appeal struck off the case. I was out 2009 in Sun City. I rehabilitated myself.
Mm-hmm.
The correctional service office, they don't want to work. We want to fix the tree. They are lazy, sitting there, up with their phones.
Moss, I'm sorry, the line is terrible there. But Moss says he was in prison for 32 years for murder and attempted murder, and he managed to rehabilitate himself. He says his experience is that the correctional services officials are just lazy. That's what I was able to get from Moss. Maxwell in Pretoria, what's your experience? Good morning.
My experience, good morning, Clem. It is very difficult. You feel that you have been judge twice, because you come from the prison, even the company, Clement, that you were working with before you go to that prison, where you didn't do any crime or anything. They will try their level best, because you are coming from prison, you ask for a second chance. They don't want to talk to people who are coming from prison. They are trying to evict even myself now to the property that they bought with my commission, Clement. That means not so long ago, I'll be outside because I went to prison. They don't want to pay any commission or anything. They just want to throw me out of the street to get more harm again because I went to prison.
Yeah, no. Thank you for calling about your experience, Maxwell, and I'm really sorry about that. And that's the shame that we're talking about, right? Sometimes it's just difficult ensuring that reintegration. Your voice notes have also been coming through.
Hi, Clement. Just a quick question. Does the department have enough capacity to monitor all these parolees? I don't think so.
Mm.
He's talking numbers of 65,000 at a time. I don't think we've got the capacity to monitor all these parolees.
Yeah, we don't. We don't.
This is a very huge problem. It comes to the government, because when they are giving skills, they should be able to use that skill and apply it to somehow give income to the government, because LIFA and the prisoners, they are the asset of the government. It's unfair for the government to take their life, and it's also unfair for the prisoner to be seen on the street, because it cannot be a justice at the end of the day. It's all in the life and line of the government of how do they use effectively the people who are in prison.
Yeah, Dr. Leta, I'll give you the last word. We have about 15 seconds. How do we move forward? And is there political will, even from government, to strengthen, you know, those programs? Because from what Singabako says, he seems to be satisfied with the rehabilitation programs.
Now, look, there's been a lot of emphasis on punishment and deterrent, but irrespective of the efficacy of the programs on offer by DCS, it's not the only issue which feeds into this narrative. I've recently published a paper in which I examined the notorious prison torture case, Medina v. Minister of Justice and Correctional Services, where offenders were tortured for days on end by members of a so-called Parkmag.
Yeah.
And I argue that the ill treatment of offenders during incarceration, their subsequent marginalization, stigmatization, discrimination after their release from prison poses a serious public safety risk. I don't think it's parole itself that's a problem. It's the wider social and economic context in which it is situated that should be examined.
Dr. Kasper Leta, thank you. Conflict criminologist affiliated with the Northwest University, Golden Miles Budu, national spokesperson of the South African Prisoners Organization for Human Rights, and Adjua Salim, senior social worker at NICRO. I appreciate your time. Also to Singamako Nxumalo, who's a spokesperson for the Correctional Services Department.